during homecoming season in mid-October, the Legion of Black Collegians was having their homecoming court practice out on the Traditions Plaza outdoors. And that night, a white student in a pickup truck drove by and yelled racial slurs at them, essentially putting a stop to all of that and causing an uproar in the following weeks. That was, I would say, the straw that broke the camel's back that started the organization of the black students on campus to fight against the racial prejudices.
From the University of Oregon, you're listening to Crossings Radio. I'm your host, Molly Zaninovich. Our guest today is Nikki Cook, an undergraduate journalism student at the University of Missouri. Full disclosure, I've been best friends with Nikki since high school. Also in the studio today, we have Scott Greenstone and Emerson Malone. Racially charged student protests have accelerated in the last few months on university campuses across the country, notably at the University of Missouri campus in Columbia. We start off by asking Nikki to explain his experience as a biracial student and how the protests began.
This whole semester, since about August, before even school went into term, there's been a uprising of different groups on campus demanding different rights that have either been taken away or have just been not given to them ever at all. And the first one would be the grad students, in the very first week, organized protests demanding that they would have their health insurance returned after the chancellor decided to take it away. That was the first widely publicized protest on campus, and it didn't get to a point where there were racially charged marches or anything until a few months later as a result of different incidents that happened on campus since then.
And what were those incidents?
The very first one that I remember would be when, during homecoming season in mid-October, there was a drive. The Legion of Black Collegians was having their homecoming court practice out on the Traditions Plaza outdoors. And that night, a white student in a pickup truck drove by and yelled racial slurs at them, essentially putting a stop to all of that and causing an uproar in the following weeks. That student had since been identified and suspended from the campus, but that was one of the first, I would say, the straw that broke the camel's back that started the organization of the black students on campus to fight against the racial prejudices.
And what was the main goal when the black students unified after that event? What were they demanding?
Well, the organization that formed from that was Concerned Student 1950, which is 1950 was the first year that black students were allowed to enter the Missouri campus. And they had a list of demands that essentially called for the appointment of more staff of color to the campus, as well as the sort of reshuffling of funds to help minority students have more resources to succeed that they weren't being given. And most infamously, their probably most controversial request was that assistant president Tim Wolf both resigned and held a press conference apologizing for his previous actions.
And what were those previous actions that the students wanted him to apologize for?
Interestingly enough, it was more they wanted to apologize for his inaction. He had only been president since 2012, and he was responsible for the Columbia campus as well as three other smaller campuses around the state. And these issues, like these incidents, like the incident I described before, they've been going on long before he was even appointed president. But he hasn't done anything or did anything more than sending kind of a system-wide email saying how the university does not stand for this kind of thing. After that incident, and a few other smaller, Concerned Student 1950 actually confronted him during our homecoming parade, stopped his car, and demanded why he hasn't been doing anything. He didn't answer, and instead he drove off and tried to escape, bumping one of the students in the process, which caused even more fuel to the fire. And after a few months of nothing going on, Concerned Student 1950 decided that he had to go because he wasn't doing his job.
You're listening to Crossings Radio. This is our interview with Nikki, a student at the University of Missouri in Columbia. The Mizzou campus has drawn national attention for the conflict between the black student body and the passive administration who have ignored their continuous demands for equality. At the center of the conflict, we have Concerned Student 1950, representing the civil rights of the black student population. Now, black students only compose 7% of the student body at Mizzou. On the other side, we have University President Tim Wolf, who was accused of A, overlooking the explicit racism within his institution, and B, failing to appoint more black faculty members. Nikki is about to mention Jonathan Butler, a figurehead of Concerned Student 1950, who started a hunger strike that would not end until President Tim Wolf stepped down. On November 7, 2015, in solidarity with Butler, more than 30 of the Mizzou Tigers football players declared they wouldn't play until the president's resignation. Now, we have two different groups on campus demanding that the administration change something. Here we ask Nikki which one posed more leverage over the administration, Jonathan Butler's hunger strike or the football players' boycott.
Oh, it was 100% the football team, yeah. Which makes it kind of sad. There was a student, Jonathan Butler, a grad student who was one of the founders and leaders of Concerned Student 1950, had been on a hunger strike for 7 days. He hadn't eaten anything except for water, and he wouldn't eat anything until the president resigned. And it was very serious. He signed a DNR, but it went completely unfounded until, I believe it was Sunday night, that the football team announced their boycotting of playing. And that was when we made national headlines, and I guess Tim Wolf started taking things seriously. It's kind of sad, but it's a huge Midwestern school, and football is kind of everything that, like, it basically pulses the blood through the system.
Could I ask really quick what percentage of the football team, like, as far as race goes?
What I've heard is that it's about 68 to 64% black and about 30% white and the rest Hispanic and Latino.
But they were unified sort of against the president.
Yeah. There were a couple announcements that night. The first at around 8 p.m. was that only the black students of the football team were protesting. And then a few hours later, the rest of them and the coach supported their boycott.
And what was the campus climate like at that point? How were students reacting when they found out first that the black students on the football team had decided not to play and then that the entire football team had decided not to play? What were students saying?
It all just kind of happened in a matter of hours. That whole week beforehand during the hunger strike, people weren't really taking it seriously. And even the professors were sort of confused and they didn't really understand the connotations of what was going on. And then after the football team resigned, that was when people started talking about it seriously and realizing that things were going to change and that the football team actually had that much power, which I don't think people realized until just then. Most of the campus, well, the campus is only 7% black, and most of the campus was very much against the hunger strike and very disappointed when Tim Wolf ended up resigning. The football team, of course, is the football team, and they're never going to be hated, but their actions were very much frowned upon.
Is it disconcerting at all that you witness this sort of massive change on the university campus instigated more so by the football team and athletics rather than the student group?
Yeah. In a way, I'm not very surprised. So much hadn't happened up until that point that me and most of the people I talked to about it were pretty sure that Jonathan Butler wasn't going to survive the hunger strike because we were very sure that Tim Wolf would not resign under any circumstances. But the football team resigning is a pretty big circumstance, so that is a little disturbing that it's the money that made it happen and not the loss of life. But in a way, it's also kind of affirming that the football team realized that, and the student athletes kind of knew how much power they had in the first place and were able to use it to do something that they believed in.
What was your role during this whole thing?
I have been involved in a lot of diversity organizations on campus up to that point, but I was also first and foremost a journalism student, and I was writing for different publications, and if I wanted to stay hired by those publications, I couldn't take a side and I couldn't participate in anything, which was getting increasingly more hard as more of my friends got more and more involved and were actually a part of some of the incidents that occurred on campus. But I still had to stay back, and I basically had to just be the unbiased reporter during all of this. That being said, in my personal life, I was a little more outspoken about what I felt. I wrote some opinion articles that I couldn't really be fired for that definitely spun things in a different direction, but I was very much supportive of Concerned Student 1950 during the whole ordeal.
Another element to the Mizzou debacle is Yik Yak, a social media app that's used on a lot of college campuses. Yik Yak, in effect, functions as an anonymous Twitter feed. Users are allowed to post anything they'd like and share it with those in their proximity under the veil of anonymity. This provides a venue for a lot of students on college campuses to quickly disseminate their thoughts about whatever's going on. At the time of the student administration clash on the Mizzou campus, some users on Yik Yak wrote things like, "How do you starve a black guy? You hide his food stamps under his work boots." Or this one, which was written in all caps, "Warning to the visitors of Mizzou, do not feed the protesters. If you do, they'll keep coming back for more and leave their natural habitat. Nikki, a journalism major, read some of these posts and published an open letter titled, Dear Racist University of Missouri Students on Yik Yak. You're listening to Crossings Radio.
Yik Yak is not exactly the epicenter of critical thinking on college campuses in any sense, but during this whole movement, it kind of, well, the pot was stirred and we saw it rose to the top in the Yik Yak forum. There were a lot of ignorant and hateful messages, but there were certain points, and there was a certain night specifically, that Tuesday night after the resignation, where there were violent threats being made and very kind of scary situations posted anonymously on Yik Yak. And I wrote the article that weekend before even Tim Wolf resigned. So it had been going on for a while. Yik Yak escalated into a bunch of people expressing their ignorant opinions to people making death threats against other students on campus, which was pretty surprising since it was such a large and sudden and scary transformation.
And how did that feel to go from being a student on that campus, living your life every single day, going to classes with those people, and then suddenly realizing quite the extent that the biases and the prejudices that other students had on that campus?
It was just surprising. I was just shocked, really. You know, I grew up in Oregon, where while we're not a herald of diversity, we're also not really known for our racism here. Not like Missouri kind of has a legacy. You kind of realize that besides the polite conversation and the small talk you make with a lot of people, that they have a lot of backwards, outdated opinions about a lot of things that just end up being hurtful when they are expressed in that way. I remember I had to be on social media about 24/7 that whole week. And I remember there being, you know, many of my people that I would consider, you know, friends were posting and like reposting articles that were just laced with racism and ignorance. And it was just very kind of hurtful to see that.
Do you have an example of an article?
Yeah.
Like that?
Actually, one of my roommates, I live in a house of five people, and one of our roommates posted an article that it was from some obscure, like, radical conservative site that doesn't really have any credibility in its own right. But I think one of the sub-headlines was, "The revolution will need its blood." And basically, black students are complaining that they're just being, that they're just whining, that they're not getting more. And it was strange because I would go home for dinner and I'd have to be, do you remember who lives here? It was just very strange. Granted, that was probably the worst situation that happened because I had to see her like for the rest of the week. But it was not the only time that I felt, in a way, kind of betrayed by people that I was close to previously.
Am I hearing it right that when you say before the revolution, there has to be blood? Is that?
Yeah, it was an article that was essentially comparing black activist groups on campus to like wild animals that needed to kill in order to get what they wanted.
Wow.
Wow, okay. Did you have any conversations with her about that in your home?
Me and my three other roommates, we talked a lot about it, but we're not confrontational people, and we didn't want to start a yelling match, but we haven't really talked since.
I think that Molly was telling me that you had said that the lines of sympathy lie very strongly upon race. Basically, like, you know, if you are black, then you're sensitive to these issues, but there are no white people on the campus who are sensitive to these issues.
Well, that's not necessarily true. You know, there's always going to be white activists that are going to help out with these kind of things because they believe in the cause. And there were quite a few people that I knew well that helped out Concerned Student 1950. The core of that group was all black, but there were definitely many white supporters. But most of the people were pretty either apathetic or vocally disdainful of the movement. But racial lines were definitely exaggerated.
You're listening to Crossings Radio. This is our interview with Nikki Cook. Nikki and I went to high school in Lake Oswego, Oregon, just south of Portland. For some idea of what it was like for Nikki to go to high school in Lake Oswego, you should know that the city's black population is about 0.7%, compared to an 89.3% white majority. In some circles, the whitewashed town of Lake Oswego is known by the moniker Lake No Negro.
I've lived in Lake Oswego my entire life. I've been pretty much one of about 10 black students that have gone through kindergarten to senior year in high school. And at Lake Oswego, growing up, it was just kind of a fact that I looked different from everyone, but I also knew everyone. It had a very small town vibe, so I never really felt like I was the other. But in Missouri, which, even though it's only 7% of the student population is Black, it felt very diverse to me. I found myself having to sort of prove that I wasn't just there in order to increase the diversity of campus, that I wasn't just affirmative actioned in, and that I actually did belong and like was cool with my white peers. And that wasn't something that I felt like I had to do in high school.
And did you experience any instances where you felt like people were putting that upon you, that idea that you were only there because of affirmative action?
Yeah, I like to explain sort of the, you know, subtle racism in Missouri to sort of in like middle school, where I remember even here in middle school, there'd be plenty of race jokes, a lot directed towards me and a lot that I would have like just laughed along with because I didn't want to start anything or that I actually didn't find offensive at the time. But in high school, when we grew up, that sort of stopped because we realized that that wasn't really funny. But in Missouri, among college kids, we're still kind of in that seventh grade mentality of it's funny to make race jokes in front of people that they're about and expect them not to take it personally, which it's a lot different from when you're 12 to when you're 19. It's just a very different, immature, ignorant culture. I personally had never been attacked overtly. I've never been called the N-word, you know, by a drunk guy late at night like a lot of my friends have, but it is definitely something that happens and something that I don't really think happens here nearly as often.
And you have friends that's happened to?
Yeah, one of my really good friends works on my same admissions team with me, and the night before a visit day in the morning, she and her friend, they're both Black, were walking past the gym late at night when a group of white drunk men were taking a Snapchat video of them and screamed, "You're all N-words." She was pretty shaken up about that and actually started a concerned student 1950 protest during that visit day later in the morning. So it got very close to me, but I was never actually in a situation like that.
And how did you react personally when like hearing those stories? Was there some sort of sense of like that could have been me?
Yeah, I always feel that the only reason why I haven't had that happen to me is just because I've been lucky. I've been in the right place at the right time. I haven't been around the wrong drunk person one night to yell that at me, but it's totally possible. It is very saddening that could happen to you, but in a way I think that the protests that erupted from it were very positive.
And do you feel like there has been a change on the campus?
I would say that the goal of the protests was a cultural change by ways of administrative change. The Concerned Student 1950 already knew that they weren't going to change the opinions of tens of thousands of students on campus in a week, but they knew that if they rearranged the administration to be more inclusive or to put their needs into account, that it would eventually get to that point. And I think that there are still a lot of students that are against what's been going on and don't believe that Tim Wolf should have resigned or that the football team should have boycotted playing. But I think that that's just kind of what's going to happen when you make these kinds of changes, and that eventually people are going to realize that the right things happened.
You think history is on your side?
I think so. I don't really think you can stop progress. And I think that it's kind of sad when people are trying to fight that. And historically, it's not going to happen. It's just going to keep going. It's just going to get more inclusive, more diverse. People are just going to have more equitable situations in the future. And I think that just knowing that in the back of my head gets me through all the criticism that's being hurled every day.
You're listening to our interview with Nikki Cook, an undergraduate journalism student at the University of Missouri in Columbia. Nikki moved to Missouri from Oregon 2 weeks after Michael Brown, an unarmed Black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri, was killed by a white police officer. This event in Ferguson, only 110 miles away from Columbia, spurred protests about racially biased police brutality across the state. Here, Emerson asks Nikki how the protests following Michael Brown's death affected the Mizzou campus.
We started school in Missouri in late August, and just around early mid-August was when the Ferguson protests were at their peak. So that was a very strange time to be going to the Midwest for the first time, but there was definitely a lot of activity on campus regarding that. There were a lot of faculty-administered discussions and protests going on, especially that first semester, and I really do think that what's been going on now is sort of riding the wave of Ferguson and Black Lives Matter. It wasn't the same people necessarily that were involved, but it was, I would say that that Missouri since Ferguson has sort of been rocked by this pendulum of change that's going to continue.
And there's been a lot of pushback to the change.
Oh, yeah. Unless you're either a student of color or a white activist, you are either completely ignoring it or completely against it.
And does it feel like there are a lot of students who do fit into that category of ignoring it? Like, would you say that there's more students on the side of being students of color and the white activists, or more students visibly on the side of just trying to be complacent?
It is overwhelmingly people are complacent or against it. The activists and the students of color are just the very vocal minority, and it's just the very silent majority that's... It's just a very strange environment to be around in.
But then how does that play out when the national coverage comes in? How do people remain complacent as all of this very direct attention is being put on the situation that they're trying to ignore? How did that work?
Honestly, I don't know how they managed to stay complacent during that, but they somehow did. I remember I was going to one of my friends' houses one of those days during that week, and we were talking about what was going on campus, and his roommate, who... This is very out of the loop and was very apathetic towards it, just sighed and she said, "I'm just so over it." And I remember thinking, yeah, do you know who's really over it? Black people. Like, it was just very, people just don't either want to be educated or just don't want to pay attention to it because it's rocking the peace on campus. But it's just a very ignorant way of looking at things.
Do you think that by having the peace rocked right now, that is going to result in the positive change that Concerned Student 1950 is looking for?
Yeah, I do. I think after so long of just nothing happening, of trying to go through the bureaucratic way of making change, it just had to come to a more dramatic conclusion. It just had to be like shaken at its foundation in order to make any change. And I do think that that's a good thing, that something did end up happening.
And you're going to return to the campus in about a week. Do you think that with the time away from the school, not just for you, but for the majority of the student body, do you think that a lot of the tensions are going to be lifted? Or do you think that it's going to resume the way that it was? Or are there going to be just the same apathetic students and more people drifting back to regular life?
Well, I think the fallout from that week with the resignations and everything going on is going to be affecting campus for a long time. We still need to find a new president and a new chancellor. And the football team's playing again, but with a lot more criticism. And while anonymous threats have subsided and there's less angry Facebook posts being shared around, it's still a tense campus. We needed this break as a campus to sort of collect our thoughts and to be away from the situation. We were kind of in the sphere of being observed and huge media companies coming in and trying to interview students, and it was just wild. While Concerned Student 1950 still has other demands, things are going to be a lot calmer now.
And since you did come home for this break, what has that been like? I know here living in Oregon, like, you're describing a whole bunch of angry Facebook posts that you would see. Whenever I would go on my Facebook, it was nothing but support for Mizzou, which I understand is coming from a place that's so far removed from the actual event that it's a lot easier to show support when you're so far away and don't actually have to be in the conflict. But the general sentiment was, this is horrible that this is happening, and that doesn't sound like that's the way it was in Missouri, where things were actually going on.
Yeah, I would say that the week that people actually started paying attention to what was going on campus, the only time that we ever thought that things were going badly was Tuesday night when threats were being made to Black students, and Wednesday when classes were canceled or sometimes not canceled because of the perceived threats to the safety of the student body. Other than that, from the activist perspective, it was very positive. He resigned and changes were being made. It was a very stressful but a hopeful time in a lot of ways.
So what was that like, interacting with your family, both during the time that you were there and in the short time that you've been back with them? Like, what have they had to say?
Well, I'm pretty sure during the whole ordeal, my mom texted me at least once an hour just to make sure that I was okay, or that, like, did he hear about this? And it's like, yeah, mom, I heard about that. few hours ago. And my dad actually emailed all of his sisters, and they emailed all of their friends and all of their acquaintances. And I would be getting texts from people, even like from extended members of my family and people from Lake Ridge that I didn't really talk to, asking if I was okay or if that, like, I'm really sorry that's happening at your school. And it was just kind of an influx of support from back home, coupled with the opposition to change back where I was living. So it was just, it was sort of, it got me through the day. It was very, back home, I've had to answer a lot of questions. I think it's good to have someone to, you know, to tell you what's going on. That was there.
And did you actually have conversations with people or overhear them saying that change didn't need to happen there?
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of people who, their opinion was, nothing needs to be changed. Why are you complaining about this? There's nothing wrong. This is just the way things is. You can't stop racism. Why are you trying to fight this? You're already here. You have a diversity scholarship. Just be grateful.
Did the race equation, did that fit into sort of your thought when you decided you were going to Mizzou?
You know, my mom's family is from the South, the Deep South, Louisiana and Alabama, and they faced a lot of racism in their older generations. And no one in my family had been to Missouri or really been to the Midwest at all. I expected a culture change. I expected to encounter a lot more people that didn't agree with what I was brought up to value. And I was okay with that. And my first year there was essentially adapting to a different environment and different people. But I did not expect there to be that much racist undertones to be going through campus when I was there. I didn't even know it existed until it all sort of bubbled to the top during all of this.
Wow. Because I know right before you left, all of our friends, we were all kind of just like, what? Why?
Oh, yeah.
Why Missouri?
Yeah, like, you guys were all joking around that I was going to school in the South, that it was like, what are you doing? You're going way out there. You don't know anyone out there. And I mean, that's true. And all that was true. But I'm still going back. You know, it's still a great program. And I think that going to a school that managed to make that much, you know, to make that much happen and realize their power and realize what needed to be done, I'm very proud of that, you know. A lot of people are worried that Mizzou is going to be remembered as the racist school, or that people are going to think of them as racists for going there. But I keep thinking, if you were on the right side of what was going on, that wouldn't really be a problem. I think Mizzou is going to be remembered for its change and not its mistakes.
You're listening to Crossings Radio. This is our interview with Nikki Cook. Here we ask Nikki what his main takeaway has been from his last semester as a biracial student at Mizzou.
I feel like a lot of my values and sort of these vague, abstract beliefs that I have were finally tested in this past week. That, you know, I believe in change and I believe in activism, but I wasn't actually exposed to it on a big scale until this past month. And I think that it's success, it's rocky success, and the difficulties that came along with it really taught me the real lens of what it means to make social change.
Yeah, you said something really interesting a bit ago, that students on the Mizzou campus have expressed racism is a problem and there's nothing that you can do about it. It is what it is. It's always going to be here. Why fight it? Is that just like a cultural difference? Because I know that here you're kind of taught like, oh, racism, that was something. Martin Luther King, he dealt with that. We're over that. That was in the past. We moved on.
Well, I think that that whole lesson of racism being in the past, that's for one, a geographically cultural thing that's changed. But it's also, that's something that only white people are really taught. My parents never told me that racism wasn't a thing. They always warned me about it. So I think that, especially in Missouri, where there is such a legacy of racism that far transcends most other places in the country, that it is just so ingrained that, oh, well, rural Missouri, what are you going to do? People are going to be racist. And in a lot of ways, you can't really change that. It's kind of true. But I think that at the heart of what is being changed and at the heart of the protests is that while we can't stop that drunk person from screaming a racial slur on the side of the road, what we can stop is the culture of apathy that surrounds that. That there was something we can do about that, and that those kind of actions do have consequences, and that we can make the campus safe for all students.
Do you think the university can change anything? I know that they can hire more faculty. Yeah. Do you think they can change anything about the climate?
The university has the power to show that vast majority white campus that other perspectives exist, that the world is bigger than the tiny town from rural Missouri that you're from. You know, that's hard to do, and the university is sort of run like a business, and that doesn't, those kind of things don't really make profits. So it's kind of hard to convince them to do that, but it is something that I believe that they can do and something that they can start to do, especially now that the door is open for that kind of thing.
Nikki used to serve as a United Ambassador, a member of the University of Missouri's Minority Student Recruitment Team. It's responsible for reaching out to high school students in low-income communities around Missouri who may not be privileged enough to afford college or even think of college as a possibility. Even though Nikki is no longer a part of the group, I asked him what pitch he would give today. How do you convince a black kid to go to Mizzou, a school that's now nationally recognized for being pretty racist? This is Crossings Radio.
Honestly, what I would say, now that the big events are done and that right now we're just experiencing the fallout and the change, that while Mizzou doesn't have a supreme legacy of inclusiveness, that I think October's and November's events showed that the students aren't going to stand for that kind of behavior anymore. That it's a school where all students are going to be valued and fought for, regardless of their background or the current climate.
But at least somebody on that campus. Yeah, somebody's going to back them up.
Yeah, there's going to be support. And it's shown that that support works, that we did something. And I think that's a pretty good pitch to give someone, that there's change that is possible.
This is Crossings Radio. I'm Molly Zaninovich. My guest today was Nikki Cook. Nikki, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Crossings Radio is a broadcast from the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. For more information on Crossings Radio, visit unesco.uoregon.edu.